Dave Henderson and my wife Cherie Phillips. We're the owners, based in a lovely place called Mudgee, New South Wales, Australia.
Hi, welcome to another of the Beerfest Brewer Profiles. These are our slightly shorter focus just on the breweries themselves and, just their stories rather than any big theme about, a chat or any group chat. It's just a way to discover a new brewery somewhere in the world, a way for me to kind of talk to other brewers at a more convenient time as well, and just get a picture of, what individual brewers are doing all around the world. So, as you'll have heard, we have Dave here from Hop and Clover. Dave is actually from Northern Ireland. He's a dairyman who is now brewing in Mudgee in Australia. And as you'll hear, he has a pretty interesting story. He actually got on TV before he brewed his first pint, as I think I understand the story. But he'll tell you more himself. It's very, very interesting story. So let's go over to Dave and let's talk beer.
So as you can tell, my Australian accent's getting thicker by the day. Currently, we're here in Ireland for Christmas, 2022. Absolutely foundered, freezing cold. Looking forward to getting back to Australia next week. We're just seeing the end of this festive holiday. So Mudgee, New South Wales, Australia. It's actually one tourist destination, best tourist destination in Australia 2 years in a run. So, very good place to be set up. My wife's from there. I'm from Derry, so it's good that she's from there. She really does sort of have that background, and the familiarity with the people. What's our role in it? As I mentioned before, we're the owners, but we're also Gypsy Brewers. So the past 4 years, I've been Gypsy Brewing at different breweries. Now my role there would be to set that up, go and engage with the head brewer, and discuss recipes and turn up on the brew day and pick his brains. Look, I've been brewing for years, but more importantly, home brewing initially, and I moved into this. I'm new to the commercial side of it, so I would pick his brain and try and get familiar with all the plant, etc. Now, I turn up for Canada Day, Canada. The wife, she's very much involved with the sort of branding, setting up the logo, the marketing side. She does a lot of can designs too, so we do custom can, football clubs, rugby clubs. We're doing pretty well in that over in Australia. I'll do all the sales and distribution too, so there's no I don't have any reps really, apart from a couple of mates looking out for me. But we're hopefully we'll get underway very soon, but in production within our own premises. We've got used to be an old winery in Mudgee, and we're just moving in now to commence production. Hopefully, I'll start playing with production a little bit now in January, February, trying to get ourselves open for Cellador by April, Easter time, when the tourism kicks off a bit more, So I've got a few months up my sleeve to get it going, up and going properly.
So, how did you get started? How did Hop and Clover come about?
Yes, Brian. So look, we come about in 2017. We were pinged through Gumtree and Facebook, funny enough, when I purchased a secondhand sort of microbrewery setup. It was Blickman's stainless setup. I had a brew kettle and everything. It was pretty much a full setup. And Gumtree and Facebook got wind of it, and all of a sudden I was on a Channel 7 Sunrise breakfast show, and the headlines were Northern Ireland man cheats wife in the brewery. And I was like, righto. My wife's straight away going, why am I involved in this too, Anyway, we'd done a whole day filming, and we sort of stepped back from that because I was only home brewing at that stage. But we stepped back and went, actually, instead of laughing about it, because we just reached out to the whole of Australia, let's have a crack and try and make something of it. So that was pretty much. We sat down coming up with the names, and Hop and Clover, hop being the hop for beer and clover being Irish. I thought I would blend them in and sort of come up with a motto of Aussie beers with Irish charm. That was our logo, motto, etc. And then we've done the branding, and the wife got Cherie got involved in that very much so, and we come up with a cracking little logo of a hop and clover, you know, Aussie Beers Irish Charm written around the logo. So yeah, we started Gypsy Brewing then, got the license for just as a wholesale production. So we could only sell wholesale at the time. So the rules were we could only sell to a pub or bottle shop, you know, we couldn't sell direct. At that stage, I was going in Australia and I found a couple that one guy was really small. So he allowed us to essentially do a small batch kickoff, you know, so we'd done a pale ale, an Irish red, and a chuck cherry stout and a ginger beer. So we put them 50 litres each and or 150 litres each. We'd done a big party kickoff of Hop and Clover. Big, all our friends, family in Australia all turned up at this. Yeah, it was a big turnout. It was a great kickoff, to be honest, and we got a lot of interest from there. Initial size was just myself and Cherie again. I had a couple of friends like sort of delving in, and I had a lot of other guys that I met in the industry or similar Gypsy brewers. So we always sort of worked together and in a united front type setup, so that when we wanted to have a beer festival, we'd all turn up and make it exclusive and make it, you know, more valuable for people to come. And same when we went to pubs, so we'd do tap takeovers. And we'd make sure we all turn up together and work it. So we'd done a whole weekend at a pub, and we'd do a day or an evening each where people could meet the brewer, you know. Even though it was essentially we were brewing at different breweries, we still were really hands on in the process of the production. Did we start with our own facility? Look, probably, like I said, I got that stuff in Gumtree. It was 200 litre kettle, 150 litre fermenter, Blickman's, and all the, I had the heat exchanger and all come with it, and a few kegs, you know. So the guy that sold it looked like he had the intentions to build a brewery and was distracted by something else that made more money. Now, 5 years into this, I can see why he made that decision. However, we continue.
I take it the beer scene is in Australia, it's not basically all Foster's, is it? I get the impression there's a bit more variety than that these days.
So in Australia, the beer scene is very well established, has been probably since sort of late 2008, 2007, 2008. You know, you had your little creatures and the likes, but it's sort of exploded now, probably in the last 3 to 4 years. We've gone from like 100 breweries to 400, 500, 600 breweries, not every one of them being a physical brewery, including ourselves. For the past 4 years, you know, we've been a Gypsy brewery, so we haven't had our own venue or outlet, you know. However, that's changing for us. We've got a venue. We've just moved into a winery in New South Wales, Mudgee. So yeah, we're just trying to set up there now and move into production, as we mentioned before. So beer scene in Australia, is it changing? I think it is. I think we've gone from that big production, big manufacturers, mass production beers into small, and almost we're starting to get localized now. So we're starting to see pockets of just inner west and Sydney there. People that just go, like obviously if you're there visiting, you'll go and visit too, but you tend to find it very local. All the people, the dog, they bring their dogs there and they have a chat and a beer and see what's new in the menu, and they always go there every Christmas now and every Easter and every festival, you know. So it's starting to become a bit more localized for sure. Now at the same time, we do have these big the best of the small breweries, independent breweries, they're all being bought out and as they're getting bought out, they're making that beer at half the price, so it's becoming in the cost of a keg, you know. So cost of a keg, for example, I would be selling $290 ex GST, so you're probably looking at about 180 euros, or, you know, I'm not sure what the exchange rate is actually, but the breweries there now are like that have been bought out. The Lionathans and the Asahis and stuff have undercut it. They're going in $150, you know, and even some of the smaller breweries that are doing well, but I get excise waivers from the tax, the ATO, Australian Tax Office, They're also undercutting too, so it's becoming a bit of a definitely a challenge there, you know. What we're doing from Hop and Clover point of view is we're just pulling in to direct sales. Before, I used to sell to lots of different bottle shops and wee pubs around the place, you know, and I found it was chasing money quite a bit. So, no fault to anyone's really, but look, by the time I spend X amount of months chasing money, that it's already outweighed the margin, you know. So we've pulled in direct, and we'll go to the bottle shops and the pubs that'll look after us and pay as well. So establish good relationships and establish our own direct sales, which, to be honest, with the Gypsy license, the Gypsy Brewing side of things, the initial license we had restricted us to wholesale during COVID. That wholesale changed into direct sales. So all of a sudden we're allowed to sell direct to public. It was great. Obviously I couldn't sell from my house, but I could sell online bottle shop. I could do deliveries as well. So that changed the dynamics of our small and restricted distribution to being really, really sort of up and competing with the rest of the guys, you know, that have their own breweries. So we started doing the markets at Mudgee and locally, and the markets has been fantastic. What I do find with the beer trends over here, the beer styles, the big American IPAs, West Coast IPAs, New England IPAs, your double dry hopped, you know, triple hopped, they're really getting into that space at the minute. But I think underneath it all, I feel we're about to head into lagers and a good pilsner and a good pale again. You know, pale's been pretty consistent, to be honest. It's always been there. It's always been a main part of the market. I just find, to be quite honest, from a Hop and Clover point of view, that we never made a IPA based on, it was a saturated market too, you know, so it's hard to push through as a point of difference. So, anyway, so that's the beer styles and that's where they're heading.
Being kind of Ireland and Australia and, you know, being in the industry, have you noticed any similarities, any differences? Like, how do you think the Irish beer market and the Australian beer market kind of stack up against each other?
Look, I'd just like to say, like, during my visit here in Derry, and even my last time I was home pre-COVID, I have found the craft beer market excelling really well. I'm very impressed with some of the products, you know, and the innovations and the barrel age side of stuff. Last time I was in Derry, there was about four or five breweries. Now I think there's about, no, it might have been three then. I think there's only about six or seven that I'm aware of. And then obviously there's quite a few more across the border there. But yeah, look, exciting times for Ireland and even up the north there. So yeah, just keep it up and looking forward to my next trip back. Yeah, look, forgot to mention there before about the trend in Australia too, hazies. Everyone's in the hazies. So look, they're the sort of styles that I don't focus on because it tends to be a saturated market. So when you're small, I feel you have to have a little point of difference. What styles we actually focus on are the Irish Red Ales. I've got a pale ale, a ginger beer with honey and lemongrass. And then I've done a mid-strength XPA. And then we've done a bitter ale. So a couple of basic sort of core recipes there we've derived over the past 4 years. I've kind of stuck to them and just tweaked them as we've evolved, you know. I've found not enough head in that, and I tweaked it, found it a little bit, needed a bit more hops, tweaked it again, and I'm actually sitting right now with an Irish Red Ale, a Pale Ale, and an XPA mid-strength called the Wee One, which is our part of our Irish charm, as you can see. I've sort of nailed these three recipes, you know. I feel they're in the zone. The only thing my challenge now is as I progress from Gypsy Brewing into the shed, the old winery shed, I've got to, one, clear out all the old yeast if I want to make the same brew, and two, maintain the consistency from brewery to my brewery, you know. So, there's a few challenges we'll come across there for sure. We like our ginger beers, big thrive and drive for ginger beers and in Australia, I think due to the heat. also, I'm friendly with a craft distiller from Caberdy, which is another village down the road, and he gives me his casks. The distiller's called Craftworks Distillery, Those really good whiskies, really good gins. He gives me his empty casks, not all of them, but some of them. And I would put in a Chuck Cherry Stout. It was in one of them. My first one was a Chuck Cherry Stout in a whiskey cask. I've done an Irish Red in a bourbon cask. And then I've done an Irish Porridge Stout also in a whiskey cask. So all come out really well. I've just recently put a ginger beer into a, what was it? A eau de vie cask, like a white spirit cask. So yeah, that was that'll be interesting when it comes out. So yeah, sort of found maybe our little point of difference there being a bit of, you know, the funky stuff with barrels. We definitely won't head into like milkshake IPAs and stuff. I don't really want to go too left or right wing with brewing beer. You know, I want to keep it sort of I want to keep it to the main market. Personal choice or market driven, like I said there, more market driven, rather than trying to be the cool brewery. I'm brewing actually beers that I like to drink as well. Probably not sure if that's the right thing to do, but I'm a pretty much middle of the road drinker. I love a good couple of beers. I don't like one of them beers you have one and you can't do anymore. And I don't like the big ABVs either. I prefer that sort of between 3% and 5% where you can knock a few and not have to worry too much, you know. Any styles I want to brew would be, I'd love to get a serious lager going, which I think now with my production shed that I've got, and I've got my own glycol system and everything, I'm looking forward to doing my own lager. And probably be an IPA. I haven't done an IPA yet. I haven't made one, so looking forward to producing an IPA where I'm probably not going to make it like everyone else. I'm going to try and pull it back to the roots of the traditional IPA. And see how that. I have made one small scale and I really, really enjoyed it. It was very much floral and a bit more malt based than some of the American IPAs and the Australian IPAs that we're all seem to be chasing.
Yeah, so back to your own stuff then. Like, where are your beers available? Are they available across Australia? Because you said you were now distributing yourself, but you also mentioned that it was a very local type market. So, so are your beers just locally available or? Can anyone get them?
Yeah, look, so our beers are available online. It's probably the one you could reach from anywhere in Australia. We've got a really good deal with the Australian Post through our Mudgee Wine Association, which really drops the postage rates, you know. And then, look, we do the markets twice a month in Mudgee itself. Do really well through that, through the tourism and the locals. You know, the locals know where, because I don't have a shop front right now. They know, well, I can get them at the markets. And I tend to keep the price down at the markets as well, just to make sure, you know, I don't know, sometimes markets seem to be a bit of a rip-off these days, but I like to see people get value for money, because you're paying next to no cost for overheads, you know, so it's, I believe you should give the people a bargain. Everyone loves a bargain. Give them a bargain, give them a good deal, you know. So you can also get it at some bottle shops as well, that we've actually mentioned before. I've pulled back in a lot of my wholesale distribution, and I only now distribute to, and I do it all myself, to bottle shops and pubs that actually look after me from a payment point of view too. Because, you know, we can all talk about, you know, credit applications and agreements and stuff, but at the end of the day, when you're small setup, it's you know, you're not going to take them to court for not paying you, you know, if it's not worth it. So I just find it's just you learn through relationships. We're also on a couple of sales platforms. There's one called Caddy, and it's pretty handy actually for the guys that don't pay you well, for the bottle shops and the pubs, etc. You tell them to buy your beer through Caddy. Basically, Caddy pay them within 3 days, and then they chase the money, but they take a little cut of it too. But sometimes that, you know, if you're going to get keep in with the bad guys, as we sell say, as we can just get them to go through Caddy. And then down the line, like we mentioned, this domestically or exporting, we would like to export from Australia. I think there's definitely a market like these expat bars, especially Irish bars and Aussie bars, like Singapore and Vietnam and Thailand and the like. So I'd love to be able to get a couple of connections there and get our products into those sort of areas, you know. And maybe one day I'd love to see the Hop and Clover Aussie beers with Irish charm go into reverse. And we could do have beer being made in Ireland called Irish beers with Aussie charm. I don't know if the Aussies have charm, to be honest.
All right, well, you can deal with that one yourself. I'm not commenting on it. But yeah, so now, I mean, you're widely distributed. You're have obviously, as you just said, like you have big plans that you'd like to go. But going back to that start again, I guess it's always about the start. But like, how did you get that foot in the door where you went around? You mentioned already that you decided that realized that you had to distribute the kegs yourself. So how did you go about that? Like, was there how much work was involved in it just to get that initial distribution?
Yeah, look, some of the challenges at the start would have been sort of breaking into the market. 2018, when we sort of first kicked off, our tap takeover done really well. And we started getting a little bit of business off that, you know. But I had to go and get I had to get kegs into a place that would can it for me. So it was canning individually per keg, you know. So it wasn't cost effective either, but it was just one way of getting your product out rather than just keg. The other thing too I learned was when the first big batch was 2,400 litres, it was like it was all kegs, and I just sat looking at the kegs for ages, you know, thinking who's going to do that? Who's going to deliver those? And quickly realised within a day or two it was me, you know. So a lot of mistakes and lessons learned at the start. And luckily, small enough business and set up to quickly move on, you know. Agility, I think when you're small, your agility and your flexibility is a lot more prominent than it would be when you're a big brewery, you know, your big setup. So it's good now I've learned all this malarkey at the start. Look, heading into a couple of years in then was, well, at the start again, was trying to get in the market. We had to use a pale ale. But it came out slightly bitter, so everywhere had a pale ale, so we just renamed it the Bitter Ale. And to be quite honest, there was no bitter ales on tap, and I made sure I read through my style guides and stuff, and it matched the criteria, so I wasn't making it up, you know. And all of a sudden the Bitter Ale was on tap at a few different pubs, and Bitter Ale was in cans, and it started to move. So yeah, we definitely pushed that point of difference. The Irish Red Ale, another cracking little beer, there was a point of difference too. Smoky, malty, toffee number, nothing like it in Australia. A little bit different to what it is in Ireland. Like, I think an Irish Red in Ireland is a lot plainer, less smokier, you know, and probably a little bit more heavier, but I think in Australia you got to lighten it. Anyway, other challenges would have been COVID. Like, I sat with all these kegs during COVID, all the pubs was shut down. I'm like, how am I going to get rid of these? And luckily, I reached out to a couple of canning companies and breweries, and they were all doing a big run at one of the specific breweries in Sydney, a big canning run. So I gave them all my kegs there, and we pretty much got them in the cans, and I got a bit of subsidized payments from the government saying, look here, there's your COVID payments to cover your loss, you know, or the money you needed to save it. So yeah, luckily we saved the day, you know, so through that. Otherwise, I think if we hadn't got those subsidies from the government in Australia, we would have, yeah, I reckon we would have shut down for sure. Or went into, you know, a bit more of a dormant phase until we got out of COVID. But luckily, like, I think COVID went really well. Once we started picking up on our sales, and then the licensing restrictions were lifted a bit, so we were able to sell direct to public. That was another saviour. So having those, and they've maintained those restrictions that were lifted have been maintained since. And in fact, we've even been given, once I get production underway, the small breweries have been given a waiver for excise. So I think it's up to $300,000 worth a year. If you make any more than that on beer, you have to pay excise or something like that, or maybe 300,000 litres, I'm not sure. But look, we're well off that. So hopefully we'll be getting, once production starts, we'll save a bit of money on the excise and be able to help grow the business even further. Any good stories during the journey? Yes, a couple were me being a little bit, how would it be, sly is the word. I remember during COVID, so I worked at a naval base there in Sydney as like an engineer, and I used to frequent a couple of local pubs there, and one of them was called the Old Fitzroy, and I remember coming in and giving them a sample of my beer, and they already sort of knew me from regular visits, you know. I always try and become a local before I offer the beer for on tap, you know. Anyway, he took this beer and he says, "Yeah, that's you're the 15th rep today. What am I gonna? And he, what have you got? The last guy offered me a free flight to Hawaii. What can you give me?" And I was like, "Well, geez, I don't know if I can get you a free flight to Hawaii, but how about I can get you a bag of jerky?" I thought, "A bag of jerky in the bag here." So I give him this bag of beef jerky that the father-in-law made, and he absolutely devoured the beef jerky and says, "I want you to put me on tap." So bag of jerky was my point of difference to leverage in to one of the pubs. And I was on tap there for probably 8 months. And then the owners of the pub changed hands, and I was out the door. They had other ideas. And then one of the other ones was another local pub there next to the naval base would have been called the Frisco's Hotel. And they were out. I remember going in to get a beer, and they had the bloody beer on tap. There was glasses over each one. And I said to him, "Look," and this was during COVID, and fair enough, like I think it was a time where Tui's and the likes all shut down. So there was no distribution because of COVID, but the pubs were still open. And yeah, pretty much your man says, I says, "I could help him out." He says, "How quickly can you get me a keg?" And I says, "Well, give us half hour." And I just jumped in my car, which is parked in the base there next to it. And I drove off to my storage, pulled a keg out and come back. And I give him this keg in half an hour, and he couldn't believe it. He nearly fell off his chair. And he says, "That's his Guinness Book of Records for the quickest keg." And then even then, when he was finished with the keg, I had it removed within half a day, you know. So he used that then as collateral and a bit of leverage against some of the big guns, you know, the Tuies and the Carltons, because they couldn't even pick up their kegs, never mind deliver them. So he started leaning on that against them, and because, yeah, which... probably, I think Carlton United and Tui's and Lion, the likes, they probably used my name in vain a few times then, you know, but it's one way of getting recognition. But yeah, there were two good stories during the journey. Look, moving onwards now, we've been on TV twice, been on the news, I've been in a couple of magazines and stuff, so definitely the marketing side, we've got it all for free, and it seems to be pushing us in the right direction. So there's a lot of good indicators out there saying and showing what we're doing is growing. I even got the stage of doing an advertisement for National Australia Bank as a small business up and coming, you know, and they paired me up with another entrepreneur who owns many restaurants in Sydney. And he just gave me some words of wisdom and on the challenges that small businesses have and that how good the banks are. I believe that. Yeah. That's we'll be picked up for the ping for that, and it seemed to be making good headway there.
So you've been Gypsy Brewing now for 4 years, I think you said. So, and you're about to, hopefully in 2023, you're going to open your own brewery and tap room in that. When do you think that'll open, and do you have any other plans any further out than that?
Well, currently I'm here in Derry for Christmas, heading back to Australia. Mudgee next week, should be in Mudgee by Wednesday, and to be honest, we'll be heading into setting up our new venue out at Mudgee, and then we'll get production underway. So but one of the challenges I have immediately will be as it's warmed up there, I'll have a lot of wild yeast in the production area. So I just want to test it with a couple of little brews and test what yeast I pull out and see what it can give me. And I'm bringing in a couple of like yeast experts and stuff into the picture, so they can get something out of it as well. And then look, hopefully we'll get production underway, maybe February, March, and then April we hope to open cellar door. So when you come to Mudgee, you can come out and do the tastes, you know, like a winery, you know. And then heading into the end of the year, I'd love to have proved either consistency into everything I'm making and producing the best quality I can with the equipment I have and the surroundings. And then I would like to look at scaling up to like from 200 litres to 1,000 litre brew house. You know, I'm trying to just make sure I get the right gear. So over the next year, I want to see what fits best. Is it going to be gas? Is it going to be electric? You know, what are my challenges this year before I invest any further into Hop and Clover? But also, look, we're moving into lemonades for Pop and Clover. So we're trying to bring in a bit more inclusiveness to families, So you get the lemonades, like homegrown, try and do seasonal from the garden, and pretty much, look, we can also use them for mixers too. So you're not just, but main thing is bringing in the inclusiveness of the family. And then we're looking at doing spirits through Sailor and Clover. So we already have sold a gin for the past year now. As a botanical one, it had chamomile, tea and elderflower, and we called it Kinigo Bay. So that's been selling very well in Australia. The gin market has definitely kicked off there, if not maxed out already. But we have got nothing in time. And to be honest, we're just there to... So when you come to the brewery, you'll have spirits, you'll have lemonades, you'll have your beers, you know. So it brings that sort of completeness, holistic sort of point of view. And then we're looking to start doing ticketed events as well over the next year, maybe 2 years, moving into a full-time venue. So when you do come to Mudgee, when we're a full-time venue in a year and a half, I'd say, you could come in and be like, yeah, most of those breweries out there, you know, but probably not as, a bit more varied rather than just beer. We would look at bringing in a catering company. The people that were leasing the estate off, the area off, they are bringing the catering service into service next year. So yeah, we should have all angles covered. Just got to make sure we get the quality spot on. Further on again, we'd like to start exporting at some stage. To, like, you got the likes of Singapore and Vietnam and Thailand and India starting to take off as well. But, you know, I'm feeling like expat bars, like your Aussie bars, your Irish bars, overseas would be a great target, you know, for a good, great consumer of Hop and Clover. But yeah, we're just one step at a time. But it's always nice to have a plan and have a bit of a runway, really, so that we can keep the passion and keep the drive, you know. yeah, that's it, really. For now, you know, we just this next year is going to be a big challenge, and we'll see where we're at next year.
So, finally, how can people find you? Do you have a website, an email, social media?
So people can find us on our website, which is www.hopandcloverbrewing.com.au, and we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram as well. And then, look, if you're in Mudgee, make sure you pop in, say hello. We are in one of the pubs in Mudgee called the Oriental Hotel on tap, and then the rest is pretty much bottle shops around there. But yeah, by all means, give us a shout out if you're ever over. That's open for collaborations and whatever else, you know. It's very lucky here when I come to Derry. I've done a couple of visits to the Walled City Brewery, where I've done a wee collab with them. A couple of years back, we done an Anzac IPA, and it was great fun. I managed to get a few hops over from Australia and New Zealand, and we made an Anzac IPA. Delicious.
All those contact details are, of course, available in the show notes. If you're a brewery and you'd like to feature, then please just go to beerfest.com and follow the links there. We'd love to hear from you. Also, of course, this is on a podcast across your favorite podcast channel. We're also on YouTube. So I'd appreciate any kind of, basically, any subscriptions, any likes, reviews, anything that would help just kind of get the word out. And hopefully we're going to bring you a lot more brewery profiles and a lot of brewer chats. Talk to you soon.